Chapter 18. Dying. On a good end to a good life. What makes old age a miserable thing, Musonius says, usually isn't the frailty or sickness that accompanies it. Rather, it is the prospect of dying. And why are people, both young and old, disturbed by the prospect of dying? Some are disturbed because they fear what might come after death. Many more, though, are disturbed because they fear that they have mislived, that they have, that is, lived without having attained the things in life that are truly valuable. Death, of course, will make it impossible for them ever to attain these things. It may seem paradoxical, but having a coherent philosophy of life, whether it be Stoicism or some other philosophy, can make us more accepting of death. Someone with a coherent philosophy of life will know what in life is worth attaining, and because this person has spent time trying to attain the thing in life he believed to be worth attaining, he has probably attained it, to the extent that it was possible for him to do so. Consequently, when it comes time for him to die, he will not feel cheated. To the contrary, he will, in the words of Musonius, be set free from the fear of death. Consider, by way of illustration, the last days of the Stoic philosopher Julius Canus. When Caligula, whom Canus had angered, ordered his death, Canus retained his composure. "Most excellent prince," he said, "I tender you my thanks." 10 days later, when a centurion came to take him to be executed, Canus was playing a board game. Rather than complaining bitterly about his fate or begging the centurion to spare his life, Canus simply pointed out to the centurion that he, Canus, was one piece ahead in the game, meaning that his opponent would be lying if he subsequently claimed to have won. On the way to his execution, when someone asked about his state of mind, Canus replied that he was preparing himself to observe the moment of death in order to learn whether, in that moment, the spirit is aware that it is leaving the body. "Here," says Seneca approvingly, "is tranquility in the very midst of the storm." He adds that no one has ever played the philosopher longer. Those who have lived without a coherent philosophy of life, though, will desperately want to delay death. They might want the delay so that they can get the thing that, at last, they have discovered to be of value. It is unfortunate that this dawned on them so late in life, but, as Seneca observes, "What you have done in the past will be manifest only at the time when you draw your last breath." Or they may want the delay because their improvised philosophy of life has convinced them that what is worth having in life is more of everything, and they cannot get more of everything if they die. At this point, readers might conclude that the Stoics were obsessed with death. They counsel us, as we have seen, to contemplate our own death. They tell us to live each day as if it were our last. They tell us to practice Stoicism in part so we will not fear death. Besides being seemingly fixated on death while alive, the Stoics had an unfortunate tendency to die in an unnatural manner. The Greek Stoics, Zeno and Cleanthes, apparently committed suicide. And Cato unquestionably did so. It isn't clear how Musonius died, but while alive he was an advocate of suicide. In particular, he advised old people to choose to die well while you can. Wait too long, and it might become impossible to do so. He added, "It is better to die with distinction than to live long." Furthermore, many of those Stoics who did not commit suicide outright did things that hastened their death. When it seemed that death was near, Marcus refused to eat. Seneca behaved in a manner that brought on a death sentence when he could have avoided doing so, as did the Stoics Thrasea Paetus and Barrius Serranus. After hearing about how these Stoics met their end, readers might conclude that anyone who loves life and wants to die a natural death would do well to avoid Stoicism. In response to this concern, let me point out, to begin with, that it is unclear that the rate of unnatural deaths among the Stoics was unusually high for ancient times. Furthermore, in many of the cases in which the Stoics did things to hasten their death, it is understandable why they did so. In particular, it is possible that Zeno and Cleanthes, who lived to an advanced age, didn't so much commit suicide as self-euthanize. They might have been incurably ill, and might therefore have taken steps to hasten death. This is what Marcus had done. And although it is true that Cato committed suicide while in his prime, he did so not because he was indifferent to life, but because he knew that his staying alive would have been politically advantageous to Julius Caesar, the dictator he was trying to overthrow. What we don't find, when we examine the lives of the Stoics, is individuals who committed suicide on a whim, or out of boredom with life, the way a nihilist might. Furthermore, when Stoics contemplate their own death, it is not because they long for death, but because they want to get the most out of life. As we have seen, someone who thinks he will live forever is far more likely to waste his days than someone who fully understands that his days are numbered, and one way to gain this understanding is periodically to contemplate his own death. Likewise, when the Stoics live each day as if it were their last, it is not because they plan to take steps to make that day their last. Rather, it is so they can extract the full value of that day, and, hopefully, the days that follow it. And, when the Stoics teach us not to fear death, they are simply giving us advice on how to avoid a negative emotion. We are all going to die, after all, and it is better that our death not be marred by fear. It is also important to keep in mind that the Stoics thought suicide was permissible only under certain circumstances. Musonius tells us, for example, that it is wrong for us to choose to die if our living is helpful to many. Inasmuch as Stoics, in doing what they take to be their social duty, will be helpful to many, they will rarely find themselves in these circumstances. Along these lines, let us reconsider Musonius's comment that old people who know death to be near should consider suicide. This is a case that seems to meet the condition just described. It is unlikely, after all, that others would depend for their well-being on an old and sickly individual. Furthermore, in such cases, the question isn't whether the person will soon die. The question is whether hers will be a good death at her own hands, or a pointlessly painful death through natural processes. Besides counseling us to live a good life, Musonius counsels us to end that good life with a good death, when it is possible to do so. Let me make one last comment about the Stoics' views regarding death. We have seen that the Stoics were inclined to take principled stands against powerful people and thereby get themselves into trouble. Why take such stands? For one thing, the Stoics thought they had a social duty to take them. Furthermore, because they feared neither death nor exile, the prospect of being punished for taking such stands, a prospect that would have deterred ordinary people, didn't deter them. To many modern individuals, such behavior is inexplicable. They feel this way in part because to them, nothing is worth dying for. Indeed, they focus their energy not on doing their duty regardless of the consequences, and not on taking principled stands that could get them into trouble, but on doing whatever it takes to go on enjoying the pleasures life has to offer. The Stoics, I am convinced, would respond to such thinking by asking whether a life in which nothing is worth dying for can possibly be worth living.